Hello, you are listening to Mental Health Insights. My name is Craig, and I'm here with Jennifer Gerlach. I said that right, correct?
Yes.
So, Jennifer and I were talking about, we actually met at kind of a mutual meeting where we're just meeting other therapists, and Jennifer is one of the only therapists that works with clients that have dealt with psychosis. I think you even talked about working with clients that have schizophrenia too. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Well, so first things first, can you just tell me what is it that got you interested in that type of work?
So I actually am a person who experienced some mental health challenges growing up. I had been given some mental health diagnoses that made me think that I wasn't going to be able to do a whole lot in my life and left me feeling very discouraged. And I found that a lot of what I believed about those diagnoses was not true, and that, you know, I could get better, and that, you know, when I got better, I wanted to help other people get better. And I think psychosis especially is interesting because even the word, you know, it sounds like psycho or crazy, and that's, you know, when I heard that word, that's what I thought of. And it's not. It's actually something that's quite common, especially, you know, in more minor situations. You know, sleep deprivation or drug-induced psychosis is fairly common, and even mental health conditions involving psychosis.
Oh, yeah. I think even a lot of times when people have bouts of anxiety, that can lead to psychosis as well.
Yeah.
And sleep deprivation is a huge thing, especially Sure. Here in America. We're pretty used to that kind of thing.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And I think there's something so important to what you're saying is a lot of times when people get into this field to help others, they become a counselor or a therapist, they do so because of some of the experiences that they've had. And going through something like this and coming out on the other side is such a big thing, because I think if I was someone that I'm hearing this right now, like I know a lot of people that listen to this, right, we experience anxiety or we experience different you know, other types of challenges, and hearing that there are ways for us to manage this and not to live the way that we may right now experience life, is it's a big thing. So one of the first things I'm kind of wondering is, so let's say I'm someone that's listening to this right now, and maybe I'm kind of in the early stages of, you know, having psychosis. Give me an idea of what are some things that I may be experiencing.
Yeah, so some of the first signs tend to be cognitive. So it can be difficulty concentrating, finding difficulty with your memory, and pretty common shortage challenges. Beyond that, it can be unusual sensory experiences. So sometimes people will be looking at something and it'll just look a little bit different, like there's something that's not quite right about it, or hearing like cricket sounds, or hearing sounds in the background, or even voices are common early warning signs of psychosis. Others can include just being a little bit more suspicious, kind of wondering, is there somebody that's out to get me, or is my family really on my side, or being a little bit more cynical and suspicious than it would be typical for that person.
Okay. That seems like it'd be scary if some of those things started happening.
Absolutely. And a lot of people don't recognize that what they're dealing with is a mental health challenge. So people sometimes will think that there's something spiritual going on, or will try to use drugs or alcohol to feel better. And sometimes the things trying to get it better can actually make it worse.
They can actually exacerbate the problem.
Yes.
Okay. I think that it sounds like what you're telling me is this is actually something that's more subtle whenever it comes on. Like there is maybe a slower ramping up process for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. It tends to be what they call a prodromal stage in the beginning. And so it might not look like a full-fledged psychotic disorder at first. But, you know, somebody may have just these really subtle changes. And the good thing is that if you catch it early, the earlier you catch it, the better. So ideally, if somebody catches that something's going on before they even start to begin experience full-fledged psychotic symptoms, their prognosis can be really good.
Okay. So the earlier and earlier you're able to recognize this, the sooner and sooner you get help, the easier and easier it is to bounce back from this.
Absolutely.
Whereas someone that maybe has like a full-blown episode or anything like that, Well, let's say that I'm walking along and or maybe I'm friends with somebody or maybe someone in my home. They experience psychosis. What are some things that I may notice about them that kind of let me know that that's what's happening to them?
Sure. It can be really hard to tell. People often will withdraw, so they might stop talking as much or kind of hide. And sometimes that's because they're feeling paranoid or they're just feeling out of sorts or different. The person may start stumbling over their words more often or even say things briefly that don't make a whole lot of sense. So an example of this might be, it's cold outside, you know, my heart was cold yesterday. Something where it's a loose association between words and it just doesn't sound quite right. But then the person will pick back up and they'll keep talking. It could look like they're whispering to themselves or, you know, maybe responding to voices or just seem off. You know, a little bit more confused, struggling a little bit more with concentration or school or work, things like that.
Yeah, it seems like psychosis and schizophrenia are kind of in the same category or the same realm here.
Yeah, so psychosis is a symptom. It's an overarching experience, and there's a lot of things that can cause people to experience psychosis. Schizophrenia is a specific kind of psychotic disorder that includes a more long-term sort of challenge with it.
Okay, so it sounds like if, like, not only are people that have sleep deprivation or drug-induced or, you know, have a lot of anxiety, maybe having, they may be, like, higher-risk populations for this. But also people that maybe are already predisposed, that already have schizophrenic-like symptoms. Or
yes.
I know that a lot of us actually, schizophrenia is something that's kind of latent in us until it gets activated by something.
Yeah, absolutely. It's often there's a stress component. So schizophrenia is most often to onset in a person's late teens or early 20s, and likely because those are some of the most stressful times in our lives, a lot of changes. And so you kind of can picture a gun, you know, that the person may have that genetic vulnerability, but unless there's enough pressure or enough stress to pull that gun, the person's not going to actually experience the full psychosis or even the schizophrenia.
I think it's so important, too, because more and more people are experiencing schizophrenia, and one of the big things that's occurring is because people are not getting adequate sleep and substance use is causing a lot of people that may not necessarily develop those type of symptoms to actually manifest more of them.
Yeah, yes. You know, anything that exacerbates your stress levels or alters your brain chemistry or, you know, especially sleep deprivation can be a trigger for psychotic experiences.
All right, it sounds like it's hard because even as I'm hearing you talk about this, some of the things that you might notice happening with someone that is starting to experience psychosis, they sound like other things too.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Like difficulty paying attention, or they're isolating, or anything like that. Like even as you're talking about that, I was like, oh my gosh, that seems like it'd be really hard to tell. But you did say that some of the loose associations that they use with words may be a telling feature.
Yeah, and everyone's experience is different, so. One person may experience more paranoia and hearing voices, but their words are pretty clear, or they may even know in the early stages that they need to hide this, that other people would know this is abnormal, but it feels so real. Mm-hmm. Whereas another person may have more of the cognitive pieces where their words start getting switched around or where they seem more confused. There's a lot of different ways it manifests.
Okay, so let's say that I'm someone that's listening to this, or someone that's listening to this knows somebody that's experiencing psychosis, or they may kind of start to have some of those early symptoms. And let's say they go and see you, right, and they're talking to you. What are some of the things that you may do to help them so that they don't have either full-blown episode, or they may actually have recovery even, you know, after something like this has happened?
Sure. So first thing I would do would be just to normalize the experience and let them know that, you know, a lot of people do have these symptoms and doesn't necessarily mean that you are experiencing psychosis, but that it's something for us to keep on the radar. I would work with the person on their stress levels, as that can be a huge trigger for experiencing psychosis, and how they're managing stress, and see if any of the ways that they're managing stress, like smoking marijuana or, you know, maybe staying up later with friends or things like that, if those may actually be contributing to some of the experiences. And then we could work on, you know, do they need a referral to a psychiatrist for medication, which can be extremely helpful, or, you know, a more comprehensive kind of diagnostic piece.
So some of the first parts that you start to look at is the stress component.
Yeah.
So do you find that with a lot of people, once that stress component is starting to kind of take them down a couple notches, that they experience a lot of relief from some of these symptoms?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that almost all of us, you know, the more stressed we get, the more likely we are to experience challenges, whether it's mental health challenges, relationship challenges, or whatnot. And I think that's especially true for people experiencing psychosis, and even people who have full-blown schizophrenia, that as stress levels go down, or as you're able to manage the stress better, that the symptoms tend to subside some.
And I kind of wonder, even I've never really thought about this, is while you're talking about this, I'm kind of wondering, psychosis, actually, I wonder if it serves some type of function in us, especially as stress ends up going up. Usually we start to develop different ways of alleviating that stress or managing it. And psychosis itself, a lot of attributes of it is giving you a certain break or alteration from reality. Yeah. And that in itself almost seems like that would help reduce some of that stress. However, staying in that space is obviously stressful, and you can't really function in life or anything like that. But I have no way of validating that or yeah. anything like that. If someone that is experiencing psychosis, if that psychosis in itself during that time kind of eases up on some of those stressful symptoms.
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of things have an evolutionary part to them, or, you know, evolutionarily advantageous part to them. So I can definitely see where you're coming from with that.
Yeah, like I said, that's not research based or anything like that. It'd just be really interesting that sometimes reality can become so stressful or so hard that the brain could potentially be like, okay, we need to change the channel for a little bit to give us a break from this.
Absolutely.
Which all of a sudden becomes hard, because then you're operating in kind of two different realms, two different realities there. Yeah. And you start to work by helping them kind of stay in this reality by reducing some of those stress symptoms, so they don't actually keep on going back and forth or anything like that.
Yeah.
And you said there are like some of the things that people may use, whether or not that's marijuana or sleep deprivation or other drugs, I'm sure, that actually start to exacerbate the experience.
Yeah.
So if someone is experiencing psychosis, what kind of recovery can they expect from this?
Sure.
Are there going to be lasting issues or anything that they're going to be facing?
Sure. So for somebody experiencing a first episode of psychosis, the prognosis can be very good. As stress reduces, a person may find that their psychotic symptoms reduce. If they continue to experience things like paranoia or hearing voices, there are strategies that a person can learn through CBT for psychosis or other kinds of therapy to kind of reality check or to test out their suspicions in ways that don't interrupt their life, or to cope with hearing voices in ways that don't interrupt their life and let them still do what they want to do.
So CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, we talked about it a little bit on here before. Reality testing, I don't know if we've ever talked about that before, so I want to visit it really quick. So reality testing is something that therapists use whenever we may ourselves kind of catastrophize things, or we may always think of worst case scenarios, or for just different kind of things like that, where we explore in a very logical sense whether or not that thought, that situation or anything is based in reality or not, right? So if I have a fear that every time I get into a car, I'm going to get into a car accident, well, I know that most times when I drive, I don't actually get into that, right? So reality testing is a way of kind of confronting some of the illogical thoughts that we may end up having to help us try to kind of challenge and restructure the way that we're thinking.
Yeah.
It's something that you use with your kids all the time if you're raising kids, right?
Absolutely.
The reality testing.
Absolutely. And I think that for people with psychosis, sometimes telling what's real can be so much more difficult. So it's important to develop a skill of knowing who you can trust and who you can ask, you know, hey, what do you think about this? Or, you know, I've got this worry that my pharmacist might be, say, exchanging my medication with poison. You know, do you go to this pharmacy too? Does that happen to you? Or would you be comfortable coming to my pharmacy with me? Or does that sound reasonable? And then a friend, you know, if you trust them, can help you sort of understand what may or may not be based in reality, or at least kind of confront some of it. And you might still be suspicious, but it's possible.
Imagine how hard that has to be, especially whenever this, it's almost like this paranoia part comes in, and where you become suspicious of so many things. That seems like that would make it really hard for someone that may have psychosis to actually achieve types of recovery.
Yes.
So I imagine that you had to spend a lot of time and effort on establishing that good relationship with
them. Yes. One of the differences between CBT for psychosis and standard CBT is a lot of it is building relationship, and they use, it's called befriending interventions, which is basically just trying to establish yourself as a trustworthy person that the person in front of you can trust, because part of this condition is that it affects your trust and it affects paranoia and beliefs that people may be out to get you or may not have good intentions. And so it takes time to show that you can be trusted.
And really being able to come to that person that you trust, and even if they're saying something that doesn't feel right to you, trusting that they still have your best interests in mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that seems like working with people that have psychosis, there seems like there's so many different parts. So the first part is being able to establish this relationship and this trusting relationship, and then working on reducing the stress.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that stress is reduced, looking at some of the life factors that may be contributing to it, and then possibly also getting on, you know, any type of medications that may be able to help with this.
Yeah.
What are some medications that typically may help with psychosis?
So, not a pharmacist, so I'm going to be careful here. But typically, medications prescribed for psychosis fall in the category of antipsychotics, and there's all a variety of them. I understand that certain other medications are also used in first episode of psychosis. I'm not really as familiar with that.
Yeah, though. I know that this is. I'm not going to be able to quote this correctly. This is something I get from a sleep book that I read probably over a year ago. But a lot of psychotic symptoms that people experience, one of the reasons that they do is because the dopamine levels in certain areas of the brain are actually too low and they're not being regulated correctly. Like I said, don't quote me on that. But what that means is that, or what's really hopeful about that is it makes good sense why people may use drugs, or they may use other things to try to make themselves feel better as their way of trying to regulate that dopamine. But it also points to how big a contributing factor. I mean, if you're paranoid about whether or not people have your best interest in mind, there's no way you're getting really good sleep, right? How can you ever relax to feel like you're going to be safe where you are?
Yeah.
And that's almost like makes it even worse, because if you don't have a sense of safety, then you're even more stressed and you're even more anxious.
Yeah.
So no wonder so much of this work has to center around that.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as, you know, like the cause of psychosis biologically, I understand that it's still pretty unknown. But it is known that for a lot of people, taking certain medications that affect dopamine do relieve some symptoms of psychosis or schizophrenia. And there's good research to show that lack of sleep is a really big trigger for psychosis, both the onset of a first episode of psychosis and increase in symptoms of people who already have schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder.
Yeah, it makes sense why some drugs that are most strongly associated with psychosis are those of like cocaine and meth, which makes good sense because those keep you up.
Yeah, yeah.
People that don't sleep for about 3 days straight, most of them can actually be diagnosed with schizophrenia after those 3 days. So the brain actually goes through such a huge transformation that your symptoms of schizophrenia become more and more revealed.
Sure. And there is some difference between a drug-induced psychosis and schizophrenia. There's sometimes a short-term drug-induced psychosis. So, for example, somebody uses methamphetamine, they end up in the ER, they're saying all kinds of things about demons. They stay in the ER 3 days, or they go to a hospital for 3 days, and they get through it. Some people won't have any symptoms after that. Some people do use certain substances and later on develop drug-induced symptoms that look a lot like schizophrenia. Oftentimes, drug-induced psychosis involves more visual hallucinations, so seeing things, especially patterns, more hallucinations with like sense of smell, and a little bit different presentation, but definitely very similar.
Well, that's amazing to even think about. I didn't even know that there's actually a different, like, schizophrenia for drug-induced versus maybe that's onset by other things. I didn't realize that they're very different. And it sounds like it's hard because some people can have much quicker recovery than other people.
Yeah.
Maybe that depends on how they get there. Yeah. Or if those people that are more drug-induced, if they're not experiencing the same amount of stress that put them in there, put other people kind of in that state, then, I mean, that seems like that would make a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And for people who do have true schizophrenia, the duration, they call it the duration of untreated psychosis, or the amount of time that goes between a person first starts experiencing symptoms and gets help, that really makes a big difference as far as their prognosis and recovery. The longer a person with schizophrenia goes without treatment, the more impact it has literally on the brain. The gray matter in the brain will be affected, and you know, once that neurological damage is done, it's harder and harder to repair. And as long as this diagnosis is going on, the person's not getting help. You know, somebody gets paranoid. A lot of times they withdraw from their relationships. They withdraw from life. They miss out on work, school. I mean, it really affects your entire life. And so the more things in your social life also get interrupted, the harder it is to get back on track.
Yeah, and I think I'm hearing some of the things that you're saying. And if gray matter goes down, the neuroplasticity in your brain goes down. So your ability to actually form new connections decreases. Which that's a scary thought in general, and there's a lot of things that end up doing that, including, like we've been talking, lack of sleep, drugs are a big factor that start to reduce that gray in the white matter in the brain. So that's kind of even scary to think about.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that the longer and longer that someone stays in that state, the more and more dangerous it is.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious, like, if someone has a episode of psychosis and they go to the hospital for it, I mean, is there like a handing off process from the hospital, really, or are they just like, all right, you're good to go, see ya?
Yeah, ideally there should be, you know, most community mental health centers, you know, there are clinicians there who are experienced working with psychosis, and so, you know, if there's a good connection with that, and the person gets in and they see a therapist and they get in with a good psychiatrist, that can be a really positive thing. I know that in certain states, Illinois is one of them. I don't believe Missouri is up to this yet, but in Illinois, we actually have, most community mental health centers will have a first episode psychosis team, you know, where if a person is having a first episode of psychosis and they're referred to that specific team, they can get kind of expedited treatment and really evidence-based treatment within that community mental health center. But oftentimes, unfortunately, what happens is a person will go to the hospital and they may stay some time, they get out, that connection may or may not be made. And, you know, if the person discontinues treatment or, you know, doesn't recognize that they have a challenge, you know, that stuff can continue going on for them.
Wow. And that's hard because then it could continue that slow buildup,
yes,
too.
Yes.
You know, especially if the paranoia starts to set in, yes. where, all right, now we can't trust anybody.
Yes, yes. And often in the early stages, you know, people tend to think they're going crazy. And it's a scary experience to think you're going crazy. And you're not, you know, a person who's experiencing psychosis is not crazy. But it can be difficult for people sometimes to want to be forthcoming to their providers, because they don't want to be labeled with something like a psychotic disorder, or they don't want to think that they are not going to get better. And the reality is that the prognosis can actually be quite good, and people do get better and people do recover. And even, you know, if there is a longer duration between the psychosis and treatment, the person can still have a meaningful recovery.
Yeah, I think I can't remember if it's something we mentioned on here, or if this is before we started recording or anything like that. If you, and this is like this with most diagnoses, if you end up getting this type of diagnosis, or you end up having these type of symptoms and they end up going away, you're no longer applicable for that diagnosis. So it's not something that you have to really walk around with for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So I think it's hard, because there's some diagnoses that you have to walk around with a lot longer than others.
Yeah.
Right? But if you don't meet the criteria for it, then that's not your diagnosis.
And I know a lot of effort has been put into trying to destigmatize schizophrenia. It's not a four-letter word. It's got many more letters than that. But, you know, there's many people walking around who have maybe been diagnosed with schizophrenia. You wouldn't even know, you know, if they didn't tell you.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, too, is a lot of times when we think about schizophrenia, right, our mind goes to certain movies and everything that just, you know, they talk about people that have schizophrenia and they're all, you know, all crazy and they need to go to a mental institution. And, that's actually a very, very small percentage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially a very small percentage of people that are outright hostile that have any of those types of conditions. That's actually very rare.
Yeah, a person with schizophrenia who's actively symptomatic is more likely to be a victim of a crime than to commit any type of crime. Not really a danger to themselves or other people, unless they're experiencing certain kind of symptoms at a certain kind of time, and that's why certain laws exist to help a person get help.
Well, I think that's so important too, because like there are so many stigmas around things, and I know the processes that we have for everything isn't like a wonderful flow. Just glad to hear that Illinois at least has something in place. I mean, I know for a long time we have the CHAD Coalition now. Whenever people were suicidal, they'd just leave the hospital and there's no follow-up or anything like that, which there is now. Okay. But with mental health, you know, it's kind of like everyone's trying to build in these structures right now, which I think is why it's so important for us as a community. If you notice someone that's having any of these type of symptoms or these things going on, then helping them kind of get to a place where they can get help, or even just having a conversation with them about it so that they have information, so you're kind of like planting that seed. So I know that we talked about a lot of this is onset by, you know, stress and anxiety. And you talked to me about using cognitive behavioral therapy, which cognitive behavioral therapy is really kind of a top-down approach. So you're having to engage someone kind of logically and rationally, and then work from there to some of the feelings and experiences that they're having, and which makes good sense with this type of condition that you kind of have to do that. Give me a sense, is there any other type of thing that you do to engage in people to help them that are having, you know, these anxiety experiences?
Sure. So another way to kind of go about it can be something based in acceptance and commitment therapy, which would be a strategy of allowing for the anxiety and making space for it, especially for somebody experiencing psychosis. When your thoughts are jumbled, it can be sometimes difficult to challenge your thoughts at first. And so just having some ways to make space for something can be really helpful, or having ways just to behaviorally just relax, as far as like, you know, deep breathing or, you know, engaging in some type of activity you find relaxing can be helpful. Also, ACT has been found to be helpful to a lot of people with psychosis who are hearing voices. sometimes, you know, no matter how much we reason, the voices don't necessarily go away. Voices are very real to the person experiencing them. And so telling somebody that the voice isn't real, don't pay attention to it, that doesn't do a whole lot of good. But if a person is able to hear a voice and have a strategy for refocusing on other things, even though they're hearing that voice, or making space for themselves, even though they are hearing that voice, that can be really helpful.
Whenever I hear you making space, the making space for it, acceptance and commitment therapy, I think, is such a powerful thing for that, because it's not denying your experience at all, right? It's not, like you said, you know, you're not trying to get you to stop the voice. It's just like, yeah, you do have that voice, and that's hard. That's going to make it hard to focus. You know, what would it be like for you, you know, while you're hearing this voice, to try to refocus and like working on that part? I think it's really important, because if someone is going through, like, not only is active symptoms or even they're building up, I could see how there could be a lot of resistance towards trying to reduce any of their stress, especially if they feel like you have ulterior motives behind it.
Absolutely.
Right. But if it's like, oh no, this is what's going on with you, I completely believe you, and I'm with you here.
Yeah.
With that, I think it allows them to kind of deepen their experience with that.
Yeah.
They kind of have a little more buy-in.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Because it is real to the person experiencing what they're experiencing. If a person's hearing voices, they're hearing voices. Sometimes mindfulness strategies and ACT can also be helpful to a person to cope with voices. But mindfulness strategies can be more difficult for somebody hearing voices as well. So, for example, a lot of clients I work with who don't have psychosis will go on YouTube and listen to different mindfulness kind of guided imagery sort of things. And that is fantastic. But if you're hearing a voice and you're trying to listen to a voice, that can be very hard to track, especially if you're actively really anxious. And so for somebody with psychosis, might recommend sort of active mindfulness activity, which could be just bouncing a ball up and down and noticing what that feels like, or putting your hand in sand and noticing what that feels like, or smelling something. It could also be using your own voice. So you might say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and listening to what that sounds like can sometimes help with putting your focus on that and allowing the voices to still be there, but kind of be in the background.
Yeah, I get that. It's almost like, what's that thing? When you'd be like, oh, like my arm hurts. And then like someone steps on your foot and they're like, well, how does your, and they're like, ow, my foot hurts. No, well, how does your arm feel? <You know?
laughs> Kind of. That's an interesting way to look at
so,
it. Cool.
Refocusing on something else so that it kind of dilutes some of the, maybe the harder symptoms. Right. And I think there's a lot of, validity to acceptance and commitment therapy. And that seems like for this type of thing that it would work really well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one study in particular that showed that in people who were hospitalized for psychosis, who got ACT, that even though their symptoms did not disappear or go down any more than treatment as usual, they were less likely to go back to the hospital. So kind of this therapy in particular, it's not about arguing with the idea that somebody at the pharmacy might be trying to poison you, or arguing with the idea that you have special powers or something, but more how do you live a good life while you're dealing with those experiences, or how do you live a good life while you're dealing with a mental health diagnosis? Yeah.
It's like, oh, like the person at the pharmacist is trying to poison you. Well, we should probably talk about how you can get your medications and you could still be safe while you're taking them, or like how you could tell like if it's poisoned, or would you feel comfortable asking somebody or anything like that. Yeah. So it's not necessarily disputing that reality.
Yeah.
It's allowing it to be there and still coming up with ways that, you know, you can access the care that you need without, without just being like, oh, I guess I can't take any medications anymore.
Yeah.
All, you know, every pharmacist is trying to poison me or anything like that.
Yeah, having some way to explore, you know, and kind of thinking, you know, if you were walking down the street and you felt like someone was following you, you'd probably turn around and see if someone was following you. You know, sort of the same thing, teaching people ways to check into things and to see if their reality matches other people's reality.
Definitely, definitely. So I'm kind of wondering, even just while we're talking about this, like I said at the beginning of the episode, there aren't very many people I know that work specifically with psychosis or schizophrenia or any of those type of disorders. So one of the things that I want people to know on here is, you know, since you are someone that works with it, can you just tell me a little bit about your practice and, we heard about the work that you do, but just give us a little bit of information if someone's trying to reach out to you.
Yeah, so first I do want to say that most community mental health centers will have services for people with psychosis. I'm not the only person out here, and any local community mental health center should have some resources for that. But specifically, I have a small private practice out in Swansea, Illinois. It's called True Story Counseling. Do individual therapy, specialize in psychosis if that's something that someone's dealing with. And we're over on 4509 North Illinois Street in Swansea. And the best way to make an appointment would just be to give me a call, 636-358-1800.
That's wonderful. Jennifer, I appreciate you coming on here and talking to us about this. I remember that whenever you reached out, I was like, oh my gosh, like I have never had anyone actually interested in talking about this thing, right? Everybody wants to talk about anxiety. Everybody wants to talk about stress or depression, mm-hmm. or, how to get your kid to stop doing this, or, how to do this in the XYZ in your relationship or anything. But this is something that is really heavy hitting for some people that happen. And it takes certain people to be willing to kind of step up with that. I remember I remember my first year of graduate school, whenever, you go around and talk about the people that you want to work with. And I remember the teacher saying, like, oh yeah, we got like all these things covered besides, any type of schizophrenia type disorders or anything, because people didn't really want to even walk into that place, because of the stigma is so great. And I think it's really unfair stigma, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that as time's going on, originally several years ago, they didn't know that therapy could be effective for people with psychosis. So it wasn't often recommended. But as time goes on, as evidence-based treatments are being developed for psychosis, I think more and more people are becoming confident in working with people with psychosis. And, a lot of the same strategies used for other mental health conditions can be helpful with psychosis, just with a little bit of tweaks.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much again for coming on. And I appreciate you guys for tuning in and listening to this episode of Mental Health Insights. I hope that you guys found it helpful. And we'll look forward to talking to you guys next time. Bye. Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information. And those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. The music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.